You're listening to the Talking Soup, Talking Soup, Talking Soup, Talking Soup podcast.
Are you ready?
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, wherever you may be, however you may be, welcome to Talking Soup Talks, the audio arm of Talking Soup magazine, Europe's number 163rd most popular first-person storytelling online magazine. Today, I have been joined and have had the pleasure of talking to one of our long-term contributors, someone who has been there since day one, contributing her view on this strange world in which we live ever since the very beginning of Talking Soup. Of course, I'm talking about none other than Leah Mueller. Leah's work is some of the best first-person storytelling that we've seen here at the magazine. It's what caught our eye. It's what took us to strange new places. Places like Burning Man Festival before the corporations got involved. And possibly sexual freedom was more forthcoming, to excuse the pun. Places like 1980s Chicago, where getting a job was hard if you didn't have coiffured hair. All across America, Leah's work captures to a T what it is to live in America. I hope you enjoyed the interview. So welcome to the Talking Soup podcast, Talking Soup Talks. Today it is my privilege to introduce to you, via the world of podcasting and radio, Leah Mueller, someone who has been with Talking Soup since the beginning. And by the beginning, I mean 6 years ago, which on and off, we have actually been going for 6 years, which in this modern society is not to be sniffed at. Leah, how are you doing?
I'm doing just fine, actually. I'm over here in Arizona, in the United States. And it's just a little after 10 a.m. and I've had my coffee, so I think I'm doing okay.
Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, ready to
not
go.
Not that. Sort of.
So, Leah, as I said, has been with us since the beginning and has been a regular contributor to Talking Soup. You can find our writing on Talking Soup and many other publications that we'll talk about later in the show. And I just have some questions for you, Leah. And I think for people that don't know your writing, it's very, very real. It's very to the point. It describes situations in really vivid detail, but not just any situations. Situations that most people could not possibly imagine from an American point of view. I think it's this kind of dirty realism, the warts and all style, which we think is quite traditionally very male-dominated. We at Talking Soup were really influenced by people like Bukowski. Younger, more naive versions of ourselves, I'd say, were more influenced by people like Bukowski and Burroughs. And we like these guys, but they represent this kind of white, male, very misogynistic viewpoint for this genre of realism, no? So the first question is, where do you look for inspiration for your writing?
Well, actually, I always liked Bukowski and to a lesser extent Burroughs, because talk about white and privileged. I mean, the guy was from such a well-to-do family that he managed to get away from, like, you know, shooting his wife to death in a drunken escapade of William Tell, and, you know, just kind of walked out scot-free, and now he's seen as a sage for, you know, every Thanksgiving they trot out his Thanksgiving prayer video, and it always kind of makes me laugh because I just am not very fond of him. But, you know, I was always influenced by Charles Bukowski, and we used to have a lot of arguments about him when in my lit classes about, you know, of course, you know, some of the women, you know, were, you know, justifiably upset by his misogyny. And other people were like, no, no, he's actually romantic and, you know, who suffered a great deal. And, you know, we would have that argument over and over again. But there's no doubt that I was, you know, that my actual writing style was influenced by him. You know, I've had female influences as well, of course. But one of my favorite influences is Don Marquis. And you may not even have heard of him. He's a... God, it's been like 100 years ago. He was the journalist that wrote Archie Mehitable. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with Archie Mehitable?
I am not, I'm afraid.
Oh, okay. Well, it's so ahead of its time. Archie was a cockroach who was a reincarnation of a free verse poet. And Mehitable was a rather, like, probably mentally unbalanced but extremely charming and charismatic alley cat who claimed to be the reincarnation of Cleopatra. And the thing about Archie was that he wrote from literally from the underside of humanity, you know. So he would like crawl into taverns, and he would, you know, he'd be in elevators, and people would try to step on him. And then he would muse about how he, if he was a butterfly, everybody would be like, "Oh my gosh, how did that beautiful thing ever get in the elevator?" But because he was a cockroach, you know, and ugly, you know, everybody wanted to kill him. And so talk about a gritty style. And this was in the newspaper every day. If you can imagine that, you know, and now there's actually been several volumes of Archie Mehitable, complete with these wonderful little cartoons. And I honestly think that Don Marquis was one of my greatest influences because of that very straightforward writing style. I also, back when I was in my early 20s, was in the Columbia College Writers Workshops in Chicago. And if you come of age writing in Chicago, you're going to write a lot of things about, you know, garbage and sewers and, you know, pollution and, you know, the anger and, you know, yeah, just things like that. And that's what everybody was writing. So it was kind of like a contest to see who could be the grittiest, I think. So
a race to the bottom.
Yeah. So I think that was a lot of my influences, you know, and it's just how I see things.
Absolutely. And it's something that we, at Talking Soup, certainly, I think that was what we saw in the first writings that you submitted to us. We were looking for this kind of first-person narrative, people talking about just everyday life and the absurdity of really kind of banal situations. I mean, your first piece was the Clown Chronicles, which
right?
We published over sort of four issues, which yeah, it talks about, for those who haven't read it, who haven't read it, like I think it's the piece that I've recommended the most on Talking Soup. For those who haven't read it, it's the first person.
It's my oldest work too.
Ah, right, okay, I did not know.
Yeah.
That. Though I suppose chronologically reading your work, yeah, absolutely. And that actually, it brings us nicely on to the next question, actually, because you're really like wonderfully derisive of kind of popular culture, and especially these descriptions of like the more kind of toxic aspects of US culture. So the Crown, mm-hmm. the Clown Chronicles, that was written in what year, more or less?
Well, I started writing the Clown Chronicles probably like in 2010,
okay.
2011. It took me a long time to write it because I wasn't in the habit of writing short stories at that point. So that was literally the first short story that I had finished in years. You know, prior to that, I'd been sporadically writing poetry and, you know, mostly if I was depressed or angry or something. Well, I wasn't in the habit yet of writing as I became later. And so it took me a really long time to finish the Clown Chronicles. And I was so proud of it when I finally finished it. I was proud of myself for actually finishing such a long story. And, you know, but it did take me over a year to actually finish that story. Oh, whereas now, if I were to write it, it might take 2 or 3 weeks. So
it's the kind of, it can be quite cathartic, I imagine, like this sort of writing about these jobs. For those who haven't read it, the story takes place in sort of Reagan-era America, you know, the sort of height of kind of capitalism and self-interest. And I suppose the question is, you start, that was the first piece you gave to us, so I mean, you start from the Reagan-era yuppies, like it's this wonderful description of your first boss there, you know, this like, this yuppie and just this wonderful narrative of like the fallen yuppie, which is like something that everybody can get behind, like no matter what generation you come from. But that was your first piece, and then like through time your pieces have reflected, you know, chronologically reflected what's going on in America. So I think one of the more recent ones, yeah, was Ice Cream, Whiskey and Rain. It kind of describes this sort of like the willful ignorance of Trump. So you've got this chronology from like the Reagan yuppies to the kind of Trump blockheads, you know.
Right.
From your point of view as a writer, as a commentator, I should say almost, that, do you think the situation's got worse or sort of better, or what's your opinion on that in that sort of time frame?
Well, it kind of brings me to that cliche, the more things change, the more they remain the same. Mm-hmm. I mean, quite honestly, I think that Reagan was kind of like the granddaddy of the, you know, kind of the disintegration of the whole middle class. And just sort of a lot of his policies, which were built upon these cost-saving policies for the oligarchy, and it's that at everybody else's expense, that were built upon by every consecutive president, whether Democratic or Republican. Mm-hmm. And the widening gap between the middle class and the poor, or the closing, I would say more the closing of that gap, and the widening gap between the very, very rich and the middle class. I mean, and it just has really just kind of continued slowly, like, you know, like paint dripping over the years. So you get somebody like Trump in, and it's basically more a symptom of the rot than I think of him as a cause of the rot.
Sure.
So honestly, I believe that that though a terrible president, make no mistake, absolutely terrible president. So it's like a joke, really. A joke, really. But when you think of actual damage, I mean, it's hard to beat George Bush, George Bush Jr. I mean, got us into wars, false pretenses, wars that continue today. You know, began this continuous drone bombing, which was intensified under Obama and further intensified under Trump, and is not going to change in the future under Biden. You know, I'm just not under any illusions about these folks. I don't think any of them, as George Carlin said, I don't think they give a damn about us. They don't. And
wolves in sheep's clothing out there.
Oh yeah. So in a way, sure, it's gotten worse, but I don't lay the blame on the doorstep of any one particular person or cause. I just think that's too simplistic.
Absolutely. No, I understand completely. I think when you read your writing, there's a lot of zeal in kind of breaking down this idea of the kind of the white conservative alpha male type as this apex of society, which is pretty, I mean, it's pretty, you know, it's prevalent worldwide, like in, and especially in mainstream writing. Do you find as a woman, has your writing been influenced as a reaction to this or ever been held up by it?
Not really. I mean, yeah, I know. It does seem to me a lot of times that a lot of writing that women do sometimes can seem like it is maybe a little more sugar-coated in some ways than mine. I've noticed that myself. Nobody's ever really like criticized me for that, or, you know, or done the opposite. Oh, it's so great that you don't do that, or you know, or anything like that. So that hasn't been an issue. But I have noticed that a lot of times women feel this pressure to be nice, mm-hmm. and to you know, and to express ourselves in a nice way. and in a way that's not going to tread on people's feelings or you know, almost like apologizing for our emotions or our impressions. So, you know, I have consciously avoided doing that, partly for that reason.
I can't recommend your writing enough, like, for, I think, certainly for people who are fans of Bukowski, people who are fans of Burroughs, this kind of dirty realism, first-person storytelling. I think your writing gives quite a unique take on it from the plethora of work that you've done and the just limitless different situations that you've lived as well. We here at Talking Soup, we were founded on the idea of the dead-end job. The magazine's been going for 6 years now. It was started when we were both living in London, the editors anyway, and working kind of dead-end jobs, just sort of getting by. And this is the reality for 99% of people, probably, I think, you know? You're just sort of working in order not to sink. This was one of the sort of founding principles of the magazine, was working these jobs, working as a bookie, working as a... you know, a cleaner, working as a busboy, working as a kitchen porter or whatever. You've got these incredible stories just talking to people that were way more interesting than talking to, how should we put it, the upper echelons of society or whatever. The Clown Chronicles, obviously, it sort of detailed your life as a clown. Well, a sort of a sales tool, I think, is what would be a better way of saying it. You also sold phone sex, which is the first time I've ever read about someone first person talking about that. That was in Selling Phone Sex. You can read that on Talking Soup. And also Nobody's Prerogative, which details your life as a topless dancer in New Orleans. Your works, they focus on these temporary jobs, these kind of getting by jobs, I suppose. What did you learn? But what did you learn from about humanity from working these jobs?
That's a good question, actually. I mean, I think one of the main things, excuse me, that I've learned is that people are always like kind of scurrying around searching for something, but they don't quite know what it is. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it's like temporary satisfaction, or whether it's the almighty dollar, or whether it's just a bit of fun, or, you know, they're just kind of like, when they get together in these little herds, and or these bigger herds, and they just kind of swarm around looking for it, but they don't really ever find it. So they just keep looking, and they just keep trying, you know? And that is both humorous and poignant at the same time, like so many things. I mean, everything seems like it's pretty much humorous and poignant. And another person, interestingly enough, that I was influenced by, also male, was Harvey Pekar. I was just thinking about that and how Harvey Pekar had this horrible job, you know, just kind of filing things. And like the most boring, mind-numbing job, you know, imaginable. And he was just lucky enough to be able to document it and actually know R. Crumb at the same time, who was able to like take his ideas and because Pekar couldn't draw, he had all these ideas, but he couldn't draw. So Crumb took his ideas and made cartoons out of them. But Harvey Pekar's the whole idea was that anything can be really interesting if you look at it in the right way. I mean, you can take the most, you know, soul-numbing, you know, situation, mundane, and if you look at it or if you describe it in such a way that it becomes interesting, then it will. And then there's a certain transcendent quality to it that emerges as a result. And I think that's true of many of the human endeavors, is that they inherently contain a certain transcendent element that we don't even realize at the time, you know, that they don't realize, that we don't realize.
There can be like extreme beauty in just the most mundane aspects of life. Like certainly many of the jobs I've worked in my time have been, you know, more educational than any college course, than anything at all. I used to work certainly in London with a fellow who used to say, like, the more people get paid, the less interesting they get, and that's when you're on kind of minimum wage jobs. And I think he had a completely, you know, valid point. That was, as I say, it was one of the founding kind of principles of the magazine. So if you're looking for a first person storytelling, or if better still, you are a first person storytelling writer and you want to get in touch with us, that's what we set out to do. That's what we're here for, to hear these stories and to focus on them. The last question, we've got a lot of writing from you, Leah, and I direct a lot of people to it. For us here we're in Europe, you know, we have a very weird idea of what America is. We don't really see anything apart from, we get the Hollywood stuff, we get the politics, and it's these kind of overblown caricatures. But what we love about your writing, what I find fascinating, is it's just this kind of the foot soldier of middle America, the jobs, the kind of just day-to-day situations that you never see unless you watch a lot of indie movies. Maybe I suppose, like, if you do that, like a lot of Jim Jarmusch.
Another big influence of mine. Yeah. Oh, Jarmusch. I love Jarmusch.
There we go. That's,
yeah.
I think I can see there's like some parallels kind of between the two. It's something that you kind of have to look for. You have to really look for. So I like directing people to your writing, because I think it absolutely hits the spot of, you know, what it is to be regular America, not the kind of overblown stuff, not the Hollywood stuff, not the whole fanfare, just what's happening day to day. And it's fascinating. It's absolutely fascinating. What I wanted to finish on, I wanted to ask you about your book, Misguided Behavior, Tales of Poor Life Choices. We'd like to know a little bit more. Does the book follow like a chronology? Does it feature some of the articles in Talking Soup as well?
Mm-hmm. It sure does.
Okay.
Particularly the older ones. It's basically a compilation of short stories that I have written, starting with the Clown Chronicles, mm-hmm. Going all the way on through to stuff from early 2019. So all of my favorite, I guess I can have favorites of my own work.
Of course you can. Yeah, yeah.
Why the heck not? All of my favorites, of the various stories that I have written over that 8-year period. Some of them edited somewhat extensively, others, you know, not so much. Are all in that book, which was published by Zikmate Press out of Montreal. So Misguided Behavior is definitely a labor of love, and they put a lot of work into that. And of all the books that I have published, it's the one I'm the most proud of. I have other books as well. There's Death and Heartbreak that came out the same year, which is poetry, and that's on Weasel Press. And then also in 2019, there was Cocktails at Denny's, an Alien Buddha Press, which is a combination of stories. There's three stories in there that were written after Misguided Behavior went to press.
Okay.
More first person stuff. And some poetry. So it's a combination of poetry and prose. But so those are my three most recent books. There's some older ones that I'm kind of about the older ones, because, you know, you look at your older stuff and you go, oh, I can do so much better than this now. Or if you're in a really bad frame of mind, go, wow, this is a real piece of shit. You know, it's just like, I can't believe anybody read this and liked it. You know? Yeah, yeah. Some people like it. Still like that stuff. But. Yeah, Misguided Behavior is what I would recommend to people if they like my short stories and they want to read a whole bunch more of them. I think there are like 24 of them in that book.
Okay.
So,
there's
longer ones.
Misguided Behavior, Tales of Poor Life
Choices. Poor Life Choices, yeah.
You can find it online. We'll link it with this podcast as well. So, make life easier for everybody in this time of greatest need. I'm sure it can be arranged. Leah, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining us here on Talking Soup Talks.
Before we go, if people want to get in touch with you, we're quite open at Talking Soup. We like people getting in touch, emailing, tweeting, any kind of communication, pigeons, smoke signals, whatever they want. Like we're always looking to hear from people. If people want to get in touch with you, Leah, how can they do it?
Pretty easy. You can go to my Facebook page, which is Leah Mueller Writer is what it is. So it's facebook.com/ Leah Mueller Writer. I'm also on Twitter at Leah Snapdragon. So that's the easiest way to find me. I'm definitely a lot more active on Facebook than I am on Twitter. If people find me, they can also send me a friend request. I'm pretty open to accepting friend requests. And unless it's somebody who's obviously a bot. And then I delete those. But yeah.
So, well, to be fair, like bots are sometimes Talking Soup's number one fans, actually. The Ukrainian, Russian following. We keep them there for the statistics, so they're like, you know, they're there.
Right.
We get a lot of Viagra from them, and they you know, there's some kind of, we're offered a lot of Viagra. If we need Viagra, we know where to go. So
that's good. Sure.
They put it in the, they put their hat in the ring anyway. Leah, this has been an absolute pleasure, and thank you very much for coming on Talking Soup Talks. You were in our first episode of the magazine, TalkingSoup.com, and you are now first on the podcast. So hopefully in the future, we'll talk again.
All right. Thank you so much for having me.
It's been a pleasure.
I look forward to well, I guess I sort of look forward to hearing myself later. So thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you to Leah Mueller for joining us on Talking Soup Talks. If you want to learn a little more about Leah's writing, her books, most recently Misguided Behavior, Tales of Poor Life Choices, that's available on Checkmate Press. Link will be in the show notes. There's also Death and Heartbreak, that's on Weasel Press, and Cocktails at Denny's on Alien Buddha. Don't worry about remembering those, I'll put them all on the show notes. In the meantime, log on to Talking Soup, talkingsoup.com, where you can read plenty of Leah's work from the beginning of the magazine up till now. If you want to follow us here on Talking Soup, we tweet at Talking Soup Mag. Otherwise, across all other platforms, high and low, you can find us at the handle at Talking Soup. If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, how about giving us a review? It can even be a bad review. That helps us too. Or if you'd like to be interviewed, then get in touch at Talking Soup. It's been a pleasure. Goodbye.